We have HVDC lines all over the world, under the oceans and buried. In Australia, the longest buried line in the world, carrying power from eastern Australia to western Australia, was built by none other than a subsidiary of Hydro-Québec. And they brag about it. In fact, on Hydro-Québec's own website, they tell us how wonderful it is to have buried power lines.
All right, that's Peter Martin of Plymouth, who is also president of the No Northern Pass Coalition, talking in Deerfield back in April. In burying the power lines, which is a question that comes up quite often. I know that the New Hampshire Union Leader did a story yesterday's paper about a key piece of land being bought in Coos County, and that is accurate. I noticed how they mentioned the town of Stewartstown taking a vote against the project before. What was funny is how they really didn't mention the letter in the story to Premier Jean Charest by the Stewartstown Board of Selectmen recently. Funny how the union leader left that out of the story. But that's okay. You listen here to Bulldog Live, you know that we cover all kinds of things relating to Northern Pass, whether it be rights-based ordinances, whether it be the discussion over it going through some prime wilderness of the Balsams property, whether it would be undergrounding it, whether it would be fracturing forests, the debate over property tax revenues, and how the town of Deerfield figured out real quick that that was a shell game on how the tax revenue figures would come up. And in fact, those numbers were revised downward for the town of Deerfield, which would be the end of the Northern Pass line where it would plug into the power grid. I've shown you how the tower heights could actually be taller than 135 feet. These are things that you don't really get too much in all the newspapers. So again, you can visit my website, briantilton.com, and click on the Northern Pass page where you can find out all kinds of things relating to it. And yes, it is updated at this rate about every other day with a new story, new copy of an interview or something of that sort. And there's certainly no slow action on the Northern Pass front. What was very interesting was I went into a store this weekend out and about on my Saturday errands, and I walked in. The guy congratulated me for the I haven't seen this gentleman in several months, and he says, "Well, congratulations on the eminent domain battle." I said, "Thank you." He says, "Now, why on earth can't they underground it?" And I just looked at the gentleman and I said, Yeah, tell me about it. That's the question that many people ask over and over again. And it is a question that has been asked repeatedly ever since the day that the project was announced. So there is a lot of questions. We hear constantly from people at Northern Pass, PSNH, that burying the power lines will cost a lot of money. They're not even considering it. And I think that if they do come up with a new route for northern New Hampshire, for Coos County in particular, I don't think any of that would be underground. It just doesn't seem to be anywhere in their plans. So what would a new project proposal show us? Really, much of the same that was proposed to us a year and a half ago. Well, joining us with some more information about the kinds of undergrounding technologies available, where this has been tried, and some neat information to get you started to think about it is Peter Martin. He is president of the No Northern Pass Coalition, joining us here on Bulldog Live. Peter, great to have you on the show.
Good morning, Bulldog. How are you?
I'm doing good. Just, again, asking the same question that many people across the state have been asking for 18 months now.
Yes. Well, the fact is that undergrounding and undersea HVDC cable is a mature technology now. And I'd just like to mention that there are a number of very, very good things about it. There's no blight on the landscape, which is one of the many things that we're very concerned with, of course, in New Hampshire because of the beauty of our countryside. And, of course, 648 about eminent domain was to protect the people from taking, eminent domain taking. But if the cables were buried, there would be no such need to be concerned. Of course, there are no public health issues with buried cable. And there'd be fewer public relations problems, obviously, from all of this. And so we'd have faster approval for the projects, which ought to make the power companies happy. Some of the other things, of course, no expensive storm damage repair if they're buried, and that equates to about 50% less fuel maintenance costs. And then on top of that, if they were buried in state-approved right-of-ways, the state would receive royalties each year, which I'm sure the state would like.
Well, yeah, the state always seems to be asking for more money every time we turn around. I want to go back on something. Anybody wants to... they think, oh, well, these massive transmission towers, nothing ever happens to them. Take a look back to the 1998 ice storm and look at the towers that would just collapse all in a row, particularly on the Quebec side of the border.
Exactly. And as a matter of fact, in New Hampshire, 100,000 people were left in the dark and the cold in mid-January, some of them for weeks at a time, because of the collapse of the electrical towers.
Exactly, and the trees snapping in half and falling on them and the like on the smaller lines. Oh, yeah, yeah. In fact, every time we go through a massive power outage like we did in the December 08 ice storm, same thing there. People always raise this question. But, you know, I want to look at it for just a moment because we've discussed this with Christophe Courchain from the Conservation Law Foundation as well about a viable alternative for undergrounding along existing rights of ways that the state of New Hampshire already owns, whether it be interstates where the ground is already disturbed, whether it's abandoned railroad beds and the like. You know, looking at them versus the existing PSNH right-of-ways and the costs and the feasibility of doing that.
Well, what's really interesting about that, I'm glad you brought that up, because what's really interesting about that is that in 2004, at the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission Technical Conference in Hartford, Connecticut, TransEnergy testified. Now, TransEnergy is a member of the Hydro-Quebec group. And they go into all of the issues saying that not only is the cost now equivalent or very close to equivalent of overhead if it is put in public rights of way because the ground is already prepared, but long term the costs are actually less than overhead. And they go on to say that undergrounding eliminates major causes of outage such as hurricanes, ice storms, tree contacts, and lightning fires, and, of course, lower maintenance costs. And then they say traditional and advanced underground HVDC transmission technologies provide high availability with manufacturer warranty that you would have less maintenance and longer life. So here's Hydro-Quebec's own people telling us that this is a very, very mature and preferable technology.
Well, and let's take a look at places just around this part of the country where it's being done and being proposed. We have projects in Maine as well as New York.
Yes, we do, as a matter of fact. And they're both major projects. And it goes to show that it is a mature technology. For instance, the Champlain-Hudson project will be 330 miles both underground and underwater. And the people who are proposing to build it don't see a problem with that. The Northeast Energy Link underground between northern Maine and Massachusetts would run 220 miles. And they say that it will be equal in cost to the overhead.
There you go. And again, why is that? Because Northeast Energy Link is putting a lot of its route right along Interstate 95.
Exactly. And the Champlain-Hudson is going underneath the Champlain, Lake Champlain and the Hudson River, and in places will be going along abandoned railroad beds. so they can do both with these cables.
What is the cable from way back when? I can't remember how many decades ago. The cable that went under the Atlantic Ocean from the United States to Europe.
Sure. And presently, there are any number of undersea cables. For instance, there's an undersea cable between Australia and Tasmania, 174 miles under the ocean and carrying 600 megawatts of power.
Wow, how about that?
And the newest information, Brian, is that there is a new cable that just finished in Europe, 348 miles between the Netherlands and northern Denmark, and is now the longest undersea cable in the world.
Wow, how about that?
Yeah.
1-866-823-1077 is our phone number here on Bulldog Live. Peter Martin, president of the No Northern Pass Coalition, one of the many groups fighting Northern Pass on the grassroots level. You know, we're focusing today particularly on underground technology for projects, transmission projects like Northern Pass, which aren't even being considered by the project proponents. And I know, Peter, when the public scoping meetings were held by the Department of Energy in March of last year, a lot of people had brought this idea forward. I had talked with some Northern Pass folks about it myself. I said, why don't you look at this? And, oh, well, it'll cost us 10 times as much to do that. So, therefore, that's not even in the cards.
Well, that's comparing apples and oranges, and it's a bit disingenuous. The fact is that, yes, if you go over the mountains where the present right-of-way is, and you have to blast out granite ledges and so forth and so on in unprepared ground, it might cost four to ten times. Ten times is really at the wild end of this thing. But if you go down prepared rights of way along interstates and state highways and so forth, and old abandoned rail beds, then the cost would be equal to overhead.
Well, and then that brings into the other question about economics for the project proponents, because then if they're going down along the railroad beds, the interstate, and the rental fees go to the state of New Hampshire rather than to utility company executives.
Exactly so. So that's one. That's the big reason that that PSNH doesn't want to consider the undergrounding option, because they want the rent on their right of way.
Well, another thing, too, is the big concern about EMF radiation. And I was recently told that if you make the towers taller, then it actually mitigates the EMF radiation. And I'm still trying to figure that one out.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, because the power companies keep telling us that there is no good research to show that there are health problems, and there are major new research from Europe, especially the UK, where they have done very, very, very detailed research. And I will just tell you that the newest study was published in 2005 in the British Medical Journal, and it shows that children who live within 200 meters, that's about 600 feet, of an overhead power line have a 70% increase in the risk of leukemia.
Hmm. Now, how about that? So there are studies, more recent studies, because we hear a lot, oh, well, the studies are inconclusive. But taking a look at European countries, when and even the state of Connecticut is doing this now more and more, that they're recommending that when you enter residential areas with transmission lines, you should underground them as much as possible.
Yes, as a matter of fact, it's the law now in Connecticut, and I read to you, they have enacted a law that effectively requires the burial of all large transmission power lines built near residences, schools, and other sensitive facilities.
And looking at the Northern Pass route from what they had originally trotted out before us, and looking at this is probably going to be the case with any new proposal that they may come up with. You know, I've heard this August is when they're hoping to have a new route cobbled together, but it's still not going to change what is going behind an elementary school in Bethlehem, New Hampshire, where that right of way is dangerously close to the school building and yards.
Indeed, I might say that the health aspects are much much greater near high voltage AC lines. And of course, we look at Franklin and Deerfield, and if all of the future plans, including this one, go through, I wouldn't raise children in Franklin or Deerfield. It would be too dangerous. There'd be way too many lines overhead.
And for anybody who may not know the significance of that line from Franklin to Deerfield, that is where the Northern Pass Energy from Hydro-Québec on down is DC line till it gets to Franklin, and then there's where the AC converter station is planned to be built, and then that would transmit the power, AC power, over to Deerfield to plug into the New England grid. And that's where we're talking about Concord, Chichester, Pembroke, and the like, although they seem to be shying away from Chichester right now because enough people have put up one heck of a fight there. But you still have Deerfield to worry about and other towns along the way. So much of these going right through people's backyards, especially when you start looking at the route through Deerfield and how many houses that these lines could very well just swing right over somebody's bedroom.
Well, exactly. And in fact, I just visited Deerfield recently, as you did.
Mm-hmm.
And the power line corridor goes very, very close to the village and virtually overhead people's houses.
Yeah.
So that's not a place that you would want to raise children. I might also add that the British study found that there is a threefold increase in overall spontaneous abortions and a six-fold increase in spontaneous abortions occurring before the 10th week of pregnancy associated with even momentary exposure to the magnetic fields in excess of 16 milligauss, which is a very, very low dosage. So that the truth is that there are serious health hazards of living very close to these overhead 345 kilovolt lines.
And burying these lines virtually eliminates that, right?
As a matter of fact, yes. When they're buried between 3 and 4 feet at the surface, you can't measure the difference between background radiation, natural background radiation, and the radiation from the lines.
Wow, that's interesting too. And looking at and it's been a while since I've seen, and I actually can't recall if I've linked to this on my own website, but there was something from one of the some studies, I don't know, by utility companies, but showing how a power line is buried and the machinery and how it can do so in actually a very quick time.
Oh yes, they did it. It's actually about the same speed of installation as it is to put in a television cable or telephone cable, and they have big digger kind of circular blades with super hardened teeth that just dig a very neat hole. The cable follows behind that, and then another machine fills back in, and it goes along very nicely along rights of way.
Actually, Peter, I found the document that I was just thinking of. This was something presented to the Federal Energy Regulatory Technical Conference in Hartford, Connecticut, back in 2004. The TransEnergy reference that you made right at the beginning of the show.
Yes, exactly, and it's part of their testimony. You're right.
That's it, and that's posted on my Northern Pass page on the August 16th, 2011 posting, as well as underneath that, the DC light application as well, talking about high voltage DC. There's something called HVDC light.
Exactly, and the good news about this is that you can, for instance, if it was buried and they wanted the power to go to Connecticut, it would never have to come up out of the ground in New Hampshire at all, and that would eliminate the health concerns that we have for Franklin and Deerfield and places in between.
All right. Wow. Well, there's certainly quite a bit out there that a lot of people like yourself have put a lot of research and effort into. I think you're the smartest one that I've come across yet on these kinds of things.
Thank you, Brian. One last thing I'd like to point out here.
Yes.
That the state of North Dakota is now busy burying their high voltage lines because they were having so much wintertime storm damage. And FEMA is helping them do this. And what's really interesting about this is that not only are they not having storm damage now, but that for every dollar spent on this mitigation project of burying the lines, they save $7 in future losses.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, so it's a win for everybody. It's even a win for the power company if they just admit it.
Well, I hear that. Well, again, Peter Martin of the No Northern Pass Coalition, how do people find out more about your group as well?
Well, go to nonorthernpass.org.
All right, very good. And quite a bit to look at there. We do have some activities coming up. If I can just hit on a couple of them real quick. July 1st, there is a meeting in Bethlehem where they're going to give an update with not in Bethlehem, in Sugar Hill, where there'll be an update. There will be a panel discussion there. There's also coming up in Plymouth, which is where you're calling us from today, Right to a Sustainable Energy Future Ordinance meeting. We've talked with Gail Darrell from the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund several times on these kinds of local issues as well.
Well, we certainly invite everybody to the one in Plymouth, and my wife and I and other members of our own group in the Plymouth area will be there, and we'd be happy to talk with folks who want to know more.
All right, very good. Well, Peter Martin, thank you very much for joining us, and look forward to many more discussions like this in the future.
Thank you, Brian.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.